Georges Simenon's Maigret, A Man's Head. Dramatized by David Cregan. Starring Nicolas Le Prévost as Chief Inspector Maigret, with Julian Barnes as Simenon, and Ron Cook as Sergeant Lucas.
Mustn't use the light. So, over on the bed, if I can just reach.
I never believed he did it, Simenon.
You arrested him and nearly got him executed.
The trail that led to him was so terribly clear. Poor simple fool.
What were you doing in a rich woman's house in a wealthy suburb like Saint-Cloud at 2:30 in the morning?
I don't know.
Oh, really? How did you get back from Saint-Cloud to your lodgings in central Paris?
I don't know.
And where's the knife?
I didn't kill anyone.
Look, Sonny, you were in the Pavillon Bleu nightclub in Saint-Cloud until 2:15 a.m. Later, in the old widow's house. Your shoes left footprints like an elephant's all over the place. Your fingerprints were on her body and also on her maid's. You had their blood on your clothes from the 18 stab wounds. It has to be you, doesn't it?
I didn't kill anyone.
Or is there someone in this with you?
I didn't kill anyone.
And he didn't steal anything, Simenon. The Henderson house was a jewel box in Aladdin's cave, but poor Joseph Hertin, whose job was delivering flowers for a florist in the Rue Sèvres on a tricycle, a 30-year-old nobody on a pitiable wage whose only pleasure was romantic novels.
Oh, dear.
He didn't steal a thing from the old American widow. So why would he kill her and her maid so horribly?
He was mad?
No. There was another brain behind this. I was away when he was sentenced. Otherwise, I'd have argued with the prosecuting magistrate.
Monsieur Camellia.
What I did instead was to arrange the boy's escape just before they chopped his head off.
If this goes wrong, Maigret, your career will be...
It'll only go wrong if you talk, Monsieur Camellia. And then there'll be a very thorough inquiry. Look, he's climbed up on the top now. Jump, go on, jump. Now run for it, and lead me to the real killer.
He is the real killer, and you've let him go.
We've let him go. You're in this, monsieur. Oh, don't worry. Dufour and Janvier will follow him closely.
You didn't worry, Maigret.
Young Hertin could have been mad, of course. Someone certainly had been, I thought, looking at the photo of those hacked-up bodies. That night, I smoked my pipe solidly for 6 hours, looking over them for something we might have missed.
Dufour?
Oh, good heavens, Chief. I can hardly see across the room.
Where's Hertin now?
He's sleeping in a riverside cafe, the Citan Gate near Issy. Dreary, but comparatively smoke-free.
Did he go straight there?
No. He led me and Janvier a real dance, looking into bars, cafes, restaurants, even the closed ones. Once he broke down and cried.
Did he ever look behind him to see if he was being followed?
No.
I'm right, you see, I'm right. He was expecting to be freed, so there must be someone else.
Is it worth risking your career, Chief, just because you feel...
Yes. Go back to the Citan Gate and wait with Janvier.
Me?
Yes, you. I suppose a patron there has a record, they usually do. So be heavy if you have to be. Try not to let him know who he's got staying there.
The Citan gets a seaman's cafe surrounded by warehouses, rubbish dumps and cranes. There are some scrubby trees, a few barges, probably brothels.
You often nose around those places.
Not this time, Monsieur Simenon.
Typical of Paris, the opposite bank is all luxury flats and smart hotels, acres of marble, crowds of hall porters, and a comforting view across to the squalor. Just the view I needed to see if anyone approached our runaway prisoner. I marched into the hotel that had a room opposite to sit and get, and I asked at once for a pair of binoculars. Police judiciaire, so be quick about it.
You were snappy.
My nerves were stretched a bit. The bait had been set. With the binoculars, I could see across into the cafe's one bedroom where Ertan was sleeping in his boots. The day passed very slowly. I watched Dufour in the bar, eating tartine after tartine. The young detective Janvier hung around outside, bored to death. And then, as the autumn afternoon finally grew dark, something did happen. The phone rang, and there was Monsieur Comelio.
Where the hell have you been? That awful rag the Siffle's got hold of a letter, giving away the whole story. It's all over the front page that the police are behind this escape and that Ertan doesn't know that we planned it. Should the law play ducks and drakes with a simple-minded murderer, that sort of thing. Well, I warn you, Maigret.
Switchboard, get me the police judiciaire. Quai d'Orfèvre, quick. Sergeant Luca.
Yes, Chief, I'll go at once. The Siffle, and where did they get the story? I'll be as gentle as I can with the editor.
And then I got through to the sit-and-get. By the light of the cafe's one bulb, I saw the phone ring behind the bar and the patron answer it. Let me speak to the man sitting by the door, eating his fifth tartine. Come on, come on. God, it's going to be too late.
Hello?
Dufour, a man has just come into the bar with a copy of the evening paper and left it on a table near the window. Get it, quick.
Where are you?
Just do it. Ertan's come down and is heading for the paper. It'll drive him crazy if he reads it.
All right.
Excuse me, monsieur. I think that paper's mine. Can no, I just...
You drive me mad, you policeman.
Ertan hit him with a soda siphon. At that moment, a boat went past. All I could do was rush for a taxi as it began to rain.
Where's Ertan, Janvier?
He escaped in the dark, Chief Inspector.
Dufour?
The ambulance men said he was all right. Chief, I'm sorry for losing Ertan, but I did try to follow.
It's all right, laddie. We'll find him again. Well, that letter to the evening paper was a bit of a shock.
You shocked?
Someone in the case was mad, and they seemed to know more than they should. They were certainly playing an uncomfortable game with me. And with the miserable Ertan. It was a good Sergeant Luca who found a clue as to where this joker might be found.
The American Bar of La Coupole in the Boulevard Montparnasse.
Oh, high society.
The editor of the Siffle got an anonymous letter at lunchtime casting doubt on the official reports and claiming that you, Chief Inspector, were responsible for, I quote, this melodramatic farce.
Do we have this masterpiece?
I gave it to Moore.
Oh, little Monsieur Moore. So good with handwriting.
The author wrote with his left hand to disguise himself, is probably very talented, and may be suffering from a fatal disease affecting his psychology.
Lord.
He may also speak several languages.
Remarkable man, little Moore.
Although the address has been cut off, the writing paper comes from the American Bar of La Coupole and has a stain made by a café au lait.
The case is practically solved, then.
Where's your pipe?
I left it in the hotel.
You don't look yourself without it.
The American Bar La Coupole is hardly your sort of place, Maigret.
The chattering wealthy, sipping expensive cocktails. Men with cigarette cases, women with cigarette holders. Most people seem to stand or sit on bar stools. It was a bustling, pointless crush when I was there at lunchtime.
It gets like that.
While every police station in France was looking out for Joseph Ertan, by now probably starving, here was I in a place where just a cup of coffee costs the earth. Bizarre.
Some of the clientele are quite intelligent, Inspector. Hemingway, Stravinsky, Satie. I go myself.
There was a girl reading a Russian newspaper, drinking a glass of milk, and a strange, gaunt young man with red, frizzy hair, very long and wild, sitting at one end of a bar, completely out of place, but
looking like an old habitué. He wore a shabby suit, and he radiated arrogance, so that no one spoke to him or shook his hand as they went past. He was very slowly eating a pot of yogurt, and clearly he had no money. Suddenly, the revolving door swept a new American couple into the bar.
William!
Edna!
Edna!
Oh, Dorothy!
A whiskey soda for Monsieur Kirby and a rose for Madame.
Oh, back from Biarritz already?
Oh, it was ghastly and raining worse than here. Oh. I mean, you simply can't imagine. And the French roads.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
The Kirbys.
The Kirbys. He was the nephew of the murdered Mrs. Henderson, from whom he inherited the house in Saint-Cloud, and, they say, between 15 and 20 million francs.
I know.
His car, parked outside, was chromium-plated. We'd met during the case, and he offered me a cigarette in his well-dressed, well-pressed way.
Oh, but of course you only smoke a pipe. I don't think I've ever seen you in this place before.
No.
My wife would love to speak to you again. And come and meet Edna Reichberg, whose father makes paper in Stockholm. Is the news true?
Pardon?
With the murderer, you know.
Oh, there's nothing to worry about.
Oh, really? Well, join us for a drink, then. You know my wife, and this is Miss Reichberg. Among other things, the skating champion at Chamonix last year.
A letter for you, Miss Kirk.
Oh, thank you. And two more whiskey sodas, please, Bob.
Outside, the chromium-plated car glittered in the dull, wet morning while a pathetic figure wandered about beside it. He shuffled through the crowds towards the door of the bar, dragging his feet, and gazed in at us with red-rimmed eyes like a ghost. He was Joseph Hertin, there, within speaking distance of me, utterly exhausted, physically and mentally.
Suppose he'd seen you?
There were so many people crushed in there, he couldn't have. I could even feel the contours of Edna Reichberg's body.
One doesn't expect to be offered cocaine at the Ritz.
Oh, come and stay with us at the George Sang to be safe, Edna.
Okay.
What's in the letter, darling?
Nothing. Oh, perhaps we should be going. We're meeting friends for lunch, and I need to check the exchange rate.
I couldn't believe that something wouldn't happen when the Kirbys left. They went through the revolving doors, taking Edna with them.
Oof, sorry about the rain. No,
not your fault.
And passed very close to Erta. I was on tenterhooks. But he looked right past them. And he was so changed, so dirty, they couldn't have recognized him from the press photos. They got into their shiny car and drove off. Glancing in one of the mirrors that covered the walls of the bar, I caught sight of a slight smile, full of sarcasm, and two bright eyes under thick, thick eyebrows. In a second, the wild-haired young man was gazing again into his pot of yogurt.
Waiter.
Monsieur.
Just do me a favor, will you? Ring the police judiciaire and tell him to send Sergeant Luca here as soon as he's free.
The bar drained. The waiters cleared the tables. The Russian girl left. The young man, now alone, sat hunched up over his yogurt pot. Luca arrived by taxi, was astonished to see Hertha now dozing on a seat in the drizzle, and wanted to act at once.
Shall I put the handcuffs on him?
Just follow him when he leaves and don't lose him. Out you go again.
I was hoping for a drink.
Waiter, where are my caviar sandwiches?
Three caviar sandwiches?
Yes, three.
And vodka?
Yes. And cigarettes?
Jutain?
Abdullah.
All right, that'll be 30 francs for the sandwiches, vodka 6, Abdullah 22, which makes...
I'll come back and pay you tomorrow.
You've no money?
No.
But if you live nearby, we could send someone with you to...
I've no money at home either.
Ah. Pierre, go and fetch a gendarme, will you? You sure you've no money?
I think that's what I said.
That sounded very cool.
He'd have loved to hear you say that. Two gendarmes arrived on their bicycles and took him off, one on each arm. He seemed grateful.
Oh, gentlemen, thank you so much.
As the party left by the door, Hertin stood up facing him. I couldn't make out his expression. But when the gendarmes took the strange young man away, he turned, as if blinded, and slouched off into the damp autumn afternoon. Luca followed. I asked Bob, the waiter, what he knew about his odd customer.
He's a Czech, name of Radek, has his letters addressed here.
What does he do all day?
Drinks two cafe cremes very slowly and eats a pot of yogurt. Sometimes he writes. I've never heard him say a thing to anyone.
Monsieur Radek, you know what you're charged with?
Oh, it's you, my bovine fellow drinker from La Coupole. May I smoke?
No. What have you got to say?
That I would like to smoke.
Can I see your passport?
But of course.
You realize you're liable to 15 days?
First offense, so the sentence will be suspended.
Says here you're a medical student.
My professor will tell you I was his best pupil. I take it you are a special sort of policeman?
A special sort, yes.
He didn't recognize you, Maigret.
Of course he did. That was almost the point. He began to paint a pretty full picture of himself later in the night cell, especially for me.
I never knew who my father was. My mother worked as a domestic servant in Brno. You know where that is?
Yes.
Ah, well done. But she died 2 years ago. Cancer of the spine, the poor people's illness.
What are your current means of support then, Sonny?
May I call you Sonny, too? While my mother was alive, she used to send me money for my studies. I was her only son and very bright, so she would have gone through hell for me, naturally.
Since then?
I have given up work, though sometimes I get translations. I am very clever, Chief Inspector.
Does the editor of the Sifle think so?
Oh, I'm afraid I don't understand.
But he did understand.
Of course. I didn't want to play his game, so I asked the duty inspector to let him go in the morning, when young Janvier could redeem himself by trailing him. I went off to the Georges Cinq, where the foyer was full of dinner jackets and fur coats going out to dine. William Kirby, for example, was changing money, and the hotel clerk was handing him 100-franc notes pinned together in bundles of 10.
Oh, you don't want me, Inspector.
Not unless you know a man called Radek.
Here's my wife. Ask her. We're dining with friends.
Is something wrong?
I'm looking for a Monsieur Radek.
Does he live here?
I doubt it.
Well, that's enough cash for one evening, I think. Excuse us moving, won't you? But they brought the car around.
So, that was that. Home to bed.
Pleased?
No. There was a diseased mind working here. In the morning, I fended off hysterical calls from Monsieur Comelio. The local inspector in Montparnasse let Radek go to be trailed by Janvier. Dufour rang to say that he'd need a wig to cover the soda siphon wound. And I waited for a call from Luca. It had been 16 long hours since he'd followed after Hertin. But of course, good sergeant that he was...
I'm at Nandy, a drafty little place 35 kilometres from Paris, and I've walked every bloody centimetre. Last night was wet, as you might have noticed, and the car splashed by me every 30 seconds as I followed Hertin. He must be utterly exhausted since he was worn out when we started. But after wandering about, he finally settled on following the Seine back to his home village.
I've been there.
So have I, at 6 o'clock this morning. When he got home, which is a pretty miserable roadside cafe, he went round the back, down into an old Watland daub outhouse, where you might keep a couple of goats. When his father opened up this morning, I'll swear he didn't know his son was out there.
Go back and see if anyone contacts him.
My socks are like sponges, Chief.
If we lose Hertin again, that'll finish me, Luca.
Enjoy yourself.
Young Janvier was not as experienced as Luca, so Radek gave him the slip very easily.
I don't understand it, Chief. One minute he was there, and the next minute he was...
Never mind, laddie. Just go to La Coupole and wait till I join you. Radek is probably there already.
Ah, Chief Inspector, do you like my haircut? Of course you do. And you wonder how I managed to afford it. Barman, 6 caviar sandwiches, some vodka, and another packet of Abdullah. I'm afraid I have no change. Just a 100-franc note. Can you handle that?
I'm sure we can.
Funny, isn't it? If I were a flashy layabout like some of those sex-obsessed playboys you saw in here yesterday, they would have taken my order on credit without a glimpse of cash.
Your change?
Oh, keep it. You'll probably have to lend it to someone we know. And now, let me give you some advice, Chief Inspector. And you too, young man, hiding so extravagantly behind that newspaper.
Me? Come over, Janvier.
And have a sandwich.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, Mrs. Henderson and her maid, you go on poking about, Chief Inspector, but you haven't got the faintest idea how it happened. For instance, you haven't noticed the part that the River Seine plays in this. Saint-Cloud is by the Seine. Artin's lodgings are by the Seine. The Sitanget is by the Seine. That is, so the papers say. Even his parents' house at Nandy is by the Seine. And you are at a complete loss to know what I am up to, aren't you? Am I anxious to be arrested for the crime myself? But how can I be brought in? I've nothing to do with Ertin. I've nothing to do with the lucky Kirby's, nothing to do with Mrs. Henderson and her unlucky maid. All you can bring against me is that yesterday afternoon, Joseph Ertin was wandering about outside, possibly looking for me. Or was he? Or wasn't he? Or was he?
Was he mad?
Probably no more than you or I. He passionately wanted to reveal how clever he was. You do the same.
It goes with the profession.
He went on, and neither Janvier nor I said anything.
Just imagine. An intelligent man. More than intelligent. With nothing to do. Who just spends his days sitting and thinking. Are you ready to admit that you are groping in the dark and I am not? I'll give you a reason for arresting me. Here and now. Look.
He put his hands in his pockets and brought out a lot of 100-franc notes pinned together in bundles of 10 and threw them at me.
There. Brand new. You can easily check them.
Could you make a little less noise, monsieur? The customers are beginning to arrive.
Oh, would you like to arrest me here? In front of the ritzy George Sankey crowd of feather brains? You would. But you haven't got any proper evidence at all. Only a puzzle.
Listen, Sonny. We'll meet again. Don't you worry. And I hate Abdullahs. These seem to be the notes that you changed for Mr. Kirby last night.
As far as I can tell, they are, but there were many more than that.
Is Mr. Kirby in?
He just went out.
Did he go out earlier? Have visitors make phone calls?
No, sir.
How did all that money last night in Kirby's wallet get into Radek's pocket when he'd been in prison? Why had Radek wanted me to know? And the question of the Seine, was that important?
Was it?
He fed me information all the time. I couldn't tell which bits mattered. At any rate, I took a taxi and went to Nandy. Just wait here. I'll walk into the village. It was one long street with a cafe bar in the middle of it. There was a sign, Évariste Ertin, Joseph's father. He never wrote to him in prison, you know.
Was there trouble between them?
Just Puritan morality.
You have a touch of that, Maigret. I sometimes see you as the wrath of God.
That's because you made me wear a long overcoat. The bar smelt mouldy, and Évariste was standing there still and blank as a statue.
Your police, I know you. You better come up to the bedroom and talk to your friend.
I looked into the damp room upstairs. In the corner was an old woman sobbing in a chair. Hurtin lay on the bed, still and white. The doctor was bending over him.
What happened, Luca?
After I phoned you, the father discovered him in the shed. He told him to leave as he'd blackened the family name. The mother spent some time with him, and then later someone went back. The father, I think. He was horrible, Chief. He'd hanged himself with a piece of string from a nail. The father cut him down quickly, and I got the doctor.
Will he live?
The doctor hopes so.
You policeman! He swore to his mother. He swore he was innocent, and she didn't believe him. That's why...
It was you who did it, Everest Hurtin! You killed my darling boy!
It was you!
Our murderer has effect beyond Saint-Cloud, you see.
Saying the name decided me to call on the House of Death in the suburbs to try again to find some proper evidence. Hello? It was still deserted. The path was covered in leaves. I still had a key. Once it had shone with all the glitterati of Europe. Wonderful conversation, parties, politics. Now the huge place was dying like the mouldy café bar in Nondi. The old widow had retreated to a few rooms upstairs, in one of which...
Unlock it, please. I don't want to break it down, so... Oh, my God. Oh. Through the mouth. And you were so carefree. Your gun, of course, was chromium-plated.
Miss Eichberg?
Yes?
I'd like to speak to Mrs. Kirby alone.
Of course. What is it?
Did you know your husband was going to Saint-Cloud today?
No. He couldn't bear even the thought of going there.
I'm afraid I have to tell you that he's taken his own life and has done it in his aunt's bedroom.
Edna! Edna, help me. Please.
You were pretty brutal, Maigret.
I had my own troubles. An interview with Monsieur Comelio.
We've reached the point where you start to write your resignation letter, Maigret.
And then Janvier. He was drunk with Radek in La Coupole. The high life.
It's all right, Chief. Leave it to me.
Something for you, Chief Inspector?
Radek.
Barman.
How long is it since you were in Saint-Cloud?
Well, I have never been in Saint-Cloud.
There's another corpse there now.
You mean, who is the lucky fellow?
Fellow?
Or woman?
William Kirby.
Ha. Oh, fill up the glasses, Bob. The charming rich are dying like flies. Here, you two women, whores. There's a 1,000-franc note on the floor. Just get down and fight for it, will you? And who owned it earlier, Chief Inspector? No! Now, Monsieur Maigret, since you have taken it into your head to follow me around with this pleasant young man, let's stay together and enjoy ourselves, shall we? All right, girls, there is another. And really fight this time. Fight each other.
Ow!
I thought of the lonely house in Nondi. And he sickened me.
You don't ask many questions, do you?
One problem I did solve easily. The money. It had gone in a packet to a post-restaurant address with initials only on it. M.V. A man of Radek's description had picked it up when poor Janvier had lost him. And I suppose Kirby had posted it in the Ritz. Though I was sure... the two men didn't know each other. When I reached my office next morning, Radek was sitting in my chair. Have you come to tell me something?
I thought you ought to know that when his aunt was murdered, the debonair William Kirby was up to his ears in debt. You didn't know that, did you? 600,000 francs. Even Bob the barman lent him money. But you see, with the right surname, you can live without cash for years, especially if you have winning ways. And William had both the name and the ways. Oh, he did. Any girl he liked, he had. And his wife didn't realize. She didn't even know that Swedish Edna was his mistress, and he wanted to divorce poor Dorothy to marry her. That was the one thing he needed hard cash for. Only a truly rich man could marry a Swedish heiress. And he wasn't rich. Not then. He is now, of course.
He's committed suicide.
Remorse, of course, or fear.
What do you want to tell me, Monsieur Radek?
Well, nothing, exactly. All this time, poor Joseph Hertin would be earning a mere 600 francs a month for pushing a bike around the streets of Paris for 12 hours a day.
And you?
Oh, me? I was deserted. But what's to become of Hertin? The guillotine, of course, for a man who only earns 600 francs a month. That's how it goes. Yet if you took me, Chief Inspector, that would be a hero's death. You can't take me, of course, because I never knew Kirby. I never knew his aunt. No one in Saint-Cloud has ever seen me. Well, haven't you anything to say to me?
No.
You aren't all that clever, really. I am. Though there are diseases of the spine.
You never considered going into politics?
And share my godlike talent with others, discussing and not acting?
Only once in the next 3 days did I let him out of my sight, the day of Kirby's funeral. That night, he came to La Coupole quite late, had a coffee, and then took a taxi, waiting, as usual, for me to take another and follow him. We went to the dreary Sitanget. Radek sat on a bollard opposite the place, and I moved up beside him.
Ah, who is following who, Chief Inspector? You, me, or me, you? Cigarette? Oh, I forgot. Now, who could this be?
Wait here, will you?
I wonder why the rich Mrs. Kirby is slumming it here. It's so undignified.
She went up to the only bedroom where Hertin had slept. Through the shabby curtains, we could see her tearing at the mattress. After half an hour, she came down, throwing money at the patron, and set off in her taxi.
Goodness. Shall we follow her, Chief Inspector?
In procession?
I'll come with you. She's going to Saint-Cloud, you know.
Really?
Oh, yes. We're on our way. She's gone into the house. Aren't you going to go and see what she does? Suppose they find another corpse in there tomorrow. Ah, too late. She's coming out again. Karin, could it be the knife? Shall we follow her and arrest her?
No. I think we'll go in, as you suggest. Come along.
What?
Let's go and look, Radek. Perhaps Mrs. Kirby got a mysterious letter explaining that her husband was his aunt's murderer and that French law forbids murderers or their wives to inherit from their victims. Perhaps it said that the incriminating knife was at the cafe or possibly here, suggesting she should come back tonight to pick it up to save her fortune.
Chief Inspector!
Perhaps the letter also revealed that Edna Reichberg was her husband's mistress and accomplice in the killings. Perhaps Edna got a letter, too, suggesting that poor Dorothy shot the debonair lover, and that he didn't do it himself. Revenge, that letter might have said, could be taken by waiting in a cupboard here where there was a knife conveniently placed.
Monsieur Maigret!
And perhaps a rather dull policeman intercepted such letters into Georges Sank and persuaded the ladies to go along with him. I wonder if there's a
body in the cupboard here.
Let go, Chief Inspector.
No.
Oh, thank goodness you've come. I thought I'd suffocate.
Wait. You should know, Miss Eichberg, that this is about judging the wealthy and the useless. And you are about to suffer the perfect judicial execution for being just that.
Put away your gun, Radek. Janvier removed the bullets earlier in a brief moment of sobriety.
His confession is almost triumphant.
Oh, it is, Monsieur Comelio. He was dying, and he felt his talent, his genius, according to his mother, was not as great as it had been. He needed to plan something perfect to fight off his despair, and he thought, still thinks, he'd done it. As he was learning to loathe the world of La Coupole, limited to his daily pot of yogurt, the idea of punishing the place or someone in it led him to think about the perfect murder. But having committed it, he needed applause to confirm his talent. And the only way he could get that was to show me proudly what he'd done. Me, his pursuer. And that, of course, meant getting caught and making his triumphal confession. He started toying with his murder plan there in the American bar, among the hated privileged. And one night, William Kirby, with some friends, read a report from an evening paper.
Here's a fool murdered an old woman for the 20 francs in her purse. I'd give 100,000 to anyone who'd rid me of my mean old aunt so I could live free of embarrassment.
To Radek, sitting in the corner, those words came like a heaven-sent opportunity.
I went to the lavatory in the other bar, wrote a letter saying I was prepared to earn the money and to send the keys of the St. Cloud house to a poste restante address under the initials MV. The letter was delivered to Kirby by the waiter, whose job that is, and unobserved in my corner, I watched it arrive. Kirby read it and laughed. But he never noticed me. Not even when he shot himself had he noticed me. He never noticed anything beyond his own pleasure. Naturally, the St. Cloud key came the next day, as I'd suggested. As soon as possible, of course, I began training the ridiculous Ertin, whom I had seen riding about on his deliveries. Joseph, you could live the life of all the people you read about in your novels. All you have to do is to reach out for the money and the jewels someone will leave lying on the bed, and it will be yours.
In cafe after cafe, Monsieur Comelio, never giving his name, he persuaded the lonely boy to do his bidding, until, on a chosen night, Radek went in and killed mercilessly the two women in St. Cloud. He had socks over his shoes, he wore gloves. He waited the far side of the maid's room door for poor Ertin to fall into his trap. As arranged, after waiting in a nightclub, the boy came in, crept up the stairs, reached out for what he thought were going to be jewels, and felt instead the body of Mrs. Henderson.
Joseph, stop that! Come through here and reach for the jewels on this other bed.
Oh dear, another corpse. Now, I have to tell you, Joseph, you'll be arrested for these killings. Oh, yes, you will. And I have to tell you, too, that with all the footprints and all the blood on your clothes, no one will believe you didn't do them. No, not even your family. However, if you keep quiet, I will arrange your escape, even if it is on the morning of your execution. I promise I will do it, but only if you never mention me at all. Which will be easy, since you don't know my name nor where I live, and I expect you've forgotten the cafes where we met. I'll take you home now in a taxi, and if you hide in the back, keeping out of sight, things might go better for you.
The killer then waited like a fox, Monsieur Comelio, watching Kirby, who had no idea this figure in La Coupole was the man he was to send the money to. Because, you see, to make the strain on Kirby worse, Radek didn't claim the money for the murder until long after the trial, intending to wait until the moment the young man was executed. However, another moment came instead. He told me it was the most exquisite climax in his life. He decided to send a letter to Kirby just after he realized I had freed Urtin. The letter said he wanted the cash sent at once to the same poste restante, and that Kirby should expect to be asked for money again and again for the rest of his life. It brought this moment of supreme satisfaction.
William!
Edna!
Edna! Dorothy!
A whiskey soda for Mr. Kirby and a rose for Madame.
You were all there together. Kirby, his wife, his mistress, Urtin, and yourself. The whole cast unknowingly interlocked. And none of you had noticed me.
Back from Biarritz already?
Oh, it was ghastly and raining worse than here. You simply can't imagine. And the French robes.
I don't think I've ever seen you in this place before, Monsieur Maigret.
Into the scene came my letter. Oh, Chief Inspector, it was a marvelous feeling. I was more than a criminal. I was an artist. I was God.
My wife would love to speak to you again, and come and meet Edna Reichberg, whose father makes paper in Stockholm, and who, among other things, was the skating champion at Chamonix last year.
A letter for you, Mr. Kirby.
Oh, thank you. And two more whiskey sodas, please, Bob.
I watched him open it. It was his death sentence, for I knew he was weak and would kill himself under the pressure of blackmail. And no one would suspect that I had done it.
What's in the letter, darling?
Nothing. Perhaps we should be going. We're meeting friends for lunch, and I need to check the exchange rate.
Radek was never quite so happy again.
I think I owe you an apology, Chief Inspector, for casting doubt on...
No, Monsieur Comelio. We all make mistakes sometimes. And anyway, it's all over now. And all forgotten, more or less.
Radek asked you to go to his execution, Maigret, where he once said he'd give you a hero's death. Did he?
No. He tripped on the scaffold. I was sorry about that, and he, of course, was furious. But it was better to be angry than to whine, don't you think?
Georges Simenon's Maigret, A Man's Head was dramatized by David Cregan, from the translation by Geoffrey Sainsbury. Nicolas Le Prévost was Chief Inspector Maigret, and Julian Barnes was Georges Simenon. Sergeant Lucas was played by Ron Cook, and Radek by Ifan Meredith. Mr. Kirby was played by Paul Burchard, and Carmelia and Bob by Philip Fox. Urtin and Janvier, Tom George. Edna and the mother, Jane Whittenshaw. Mrs. Kirby was played by Beth Chalmers. And Dufour, Évariste and the clerk by Ben Crowe. The music was by Lucinda Mason Brown. The director was Ned Chaillet.